Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle is with me. We're back on a regular schedule, folks, and we're going to talk about some news around the league, some Bears camp, just all kinds of stuff today. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm good. I'm a little under the weather, but I'm gritting through it so that we get a pod in this week.
So, yeah, I mean, this is a Bears podcast, all right? You got to grit your ass to get out here and do this thing. Don't grit your ass, all right? Like, grit everything.
Grit your ass on. All right.
Grit the whole body.
Don't worry. If I were to, I would describe my ass as gritty. It's certainly not smooth by any means. I mean, there's friction, I would say.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, no.
That's important. We'll put that in the lore of the Scottcast. Your ass is pretty gritty.
This week is kind of a... So I think next week will... When does Hard Knocks debut?
It starts next Thursday. So 1 week from today when we are recording this. Whether or not... I can tell you right now, it's going to be a little bit later for me to record that. So next episode's going to be a little bit more than a week.
So it'll premiere on August 6th. So we've got...
It's the 6th.
Yeah, okay. So we'll fit in one more before we get to that. But yeah, this is just kind of a bits and bobs, musing, some early reactions to the first couple of days of Bears training camp, some around the NFL stuff. Yeah, so let's talk about the Bears beat writers, and they're historically a pessimistic group, and for good reason.
Absolutely.
Dan Wiederer, I kind of owe Dan Wiederer a little bit of a mea culpa, because, I was pretty harsh on that guy, like a lot of people were, because he had a very negative tone the last couple of years. And there's still some stuff that I think he was being kind of stupid about. Like in 2022, he kept really hammering on the, they need to learn how to win. They need to learn how to close kind of thing, when we kept pointing out that tanking, that it was objectively better for the long-term franchise that the Bears just lose those games rather than go 5-11. And I mean, it sure as shit was. They parlayed it into 2 number one overall picks and possibly a franchise quarterback at this point. So my frustration with Dan there aside, he took a lot of shit the last 2 training camps, especially from Bears Twitter, because he was relentlessly negative about the Bears offense and about Justin Fields. And the thing is, he was relentlessly negative in a very dry way. He would usually be like, not a good day for the Bears first team offense. There would have been, if they were tracking sacks, I counted that there would have been 3 or 4, blah, blah. So he wasn't like making stuff up. It wasn't kind of like a trolling thing at all. He would just act, he would refuse to sugarcoat any of it.
Yeah.
And both of the last 2 years, the Bears offense came out very slow out of the gate. September, they were terrible both years. Justin Fields never put it all together. So I think we all, it's funny to me though, because like, if you ask anybody on Bears Twitter for the most part that about Dan Wiederer, people will be like, ah, oh, fuck that guy. And I think that's funny because like a lot of Bears fans, for example, they really hate still a lot of the national guys who were very harsh on Mitch Trubisky. And if you ask him, they'd be like, well, he was always blah, blah, blah about Mitch. And I would be like, okay, well, was he wrong to be down on Mitch? Like, was he wrong to be skeptical of that guy? And so even when these guys are proven right, the Bears fans tend to remember hating the guy, but they don't necessarily remember that the reason they hated him was wrong. So I got to give Dan Wiederer a little credit. He was right about Justin Fields. And so I say that to pivot into my point, which is that Dan Wiederer said just the other day, he goes, he has a long way to go, obviously, as a rookie to become a top 10 NFL quarterback. But there are a lot of QB, he's called them quarterback feel moments with Caleb Williams that you see already. Those things that add up to greatness. He says, you can see that they are in there. Now, obviously, it's going to be about consistency. It's going to be about putting into practice. But, just for Dan Wiederer to come out and say, like, hey, I'm already seeing some moments where you can just tell, like, this guy really gets quarterbacking in a way that his predecessors didn't. That means something to me that pessimist Dan is seeing that. And Mark Potash, who is also usually one of the more skeptical beat writers. And Mark, I think, sometimes does troll just to troll. So I get why he gets people's goat sometimes. But he said, he was like, my biggest takeaway from the first week of Bears training camp, I think they got a lot better at quarterback. I really do. So I think it's, and it really doesn't sound like Caleb Williams is like lighting it up consistently. Mm-hmm. Or and making big play after big play, but there's been a lot of praise for how smooth the operation has been, how few penalties they've had, how competent they look. He's taking his checkdowns when they're there. They're moving the ball. Haven't been a lot of turnovers. So it just seems to be, there seems to be a general consensus that like, yeah, things are looking pretty good for week one of training camp for a rookie's first year. And there seems to be this general feeling, even among the people. Because, you know, it doesn't mean there are Bears writers who I think are more homers than others. And I tend to take their reports with a little more of a grain of salt than others. But when you get this chorus from the people who are known for being the main skeptics, and they're like, yeah, I've been impressed with Caleb Williams so far. That's encouraging for sure. And of course, they're the Bears. They have the dumbest media policies ever when it comes to training camp. People can't tweet videos of plays or anything like that, which is exceedingly frustrating. Especially when you have Hard Knocks filming the whole fucking thing anyways, you really, like, you've got Hard Knocks in there and you're really going to draw the line at fans on Twitter sharing a video of a play. But one of the few plays that I have seen video of, there was a play, I sent it to you, where Caleb hits DJ Moore over the, on a crossing route. And when you watch the video, you can see Caleb climbs the pocket, keeps his feet set and shuffling as he does, climbs the pocket, his eye, you can watch his eyes the whole time. His eyes are constantly downfield. He's never dipping down, looking to run. It's a great play. And to me, that's probably the kind of thing when Weider is referring to QB feel moments that you didn't see a lot of from the last guy. That to me stuck out immediately because I was like, when was the last time you saw, and Mitch was terrible at it too. Mitch loved to leak out of the back of the pocket, loved to fall back. Where and Justin would sometimes go up in the pocket, but I felt like when Justin moved up, his eyes were already down and he was looking for a gap to run through. And so it was refreshing just from that one clip to be like, there's an example that you didn't see a whole lot of a guy stepping up in the pocket, keeping his eyes downfield the whole time, and then throwing the ball over the middle for a completion after moving up and buying himself time and space to do so. So the QB feel is encouraging.
Yeah. I'm not going to put much truck in this until the pads come on, obviously.
Absolutely.
No horrible reports, I guess, so far. Nothing like he's it was interesting, his final year in college for Caleb, because my biggest issue with him is in his Heisman Trophy year, a lot of what you got out of Caleb were these big, explosive, Manziel-like plays, right, where everything would break down, he'd make this crazy escape, and then he'd throw a pass into broken coverage. And we've seen that's just not really going to translate to the NFL. You know, last year what we saw was a lot of golfing, I think. We saw a lot of, like, I'm going to be on time, I'm going to make a seven-yard throw, you know, we're going to take what we can get, and we're going to move the ball down the field. And that's kind of what we've seen translate so far in the first week. Now, of course, we're saying this after, like, today, which was his worst day. The pads still aren't on, but a lot of the reports are he got strip-sacked by Montez Sweat, threw a near interception to Byard. Just not great for the offense overall. Doesn't seem like it was just Caleb. One of the big things that happens, it seems like, every year before pads comes on, is the offensive line just gets dominated. So it's hard to say how much of that is going to translate into the season. But right now it's been Sweat and Jervon Dexter, and that's kind of what I've gotten out of camp. It's just hard to say what they're going to do before they put pads on. It's just like, what is that? Is that even football? You know, I'm not. But what we can say that's positive about Caleb, like you said, he's on time, he's staying in the pocket, he's making accurate throws, and he's taking what's given to him. And that's absolutely not something that we saw with Fields. Now, the other thing about Bears beat reporters is that's really going to get them horny. So of course they're going to give the big thumbs up to a guy who just takes what's open, takes short throws, you know, and just matriculates the ball downfield. We fucking love that in Chicago. So we'll see. I mean, it's positive, but it's also like, I don't know how much of that's going to translate, right? We're going to learn a lot more in the next week when
This is also the rare Bears offense with enough talent on it that there's probably going to be times where checking it down truly is. Because that was my big complaint in 2022, was that people would say, oh, Justin needs to check it down more. And I'd be like, he doesn't have any weapons. If he checks it down, they won't do anything. They won't get anything out of that. So, like, this year, you know, there's going to be times where if the defense has gone downfield with Keenan Allen, with DJ Moore, with Rome Odunze, there's going to be a lot of times where you dump that thing into the flat to Swift and get 8-9 free yards from it, and that's going to be the right play a lot of the time. So there is talent around there, which creates opportunities, which makes it easier to do the quote-unquote right thing, which I think Justin did feel that pressure sometimes, that if he did the right thing, you know, he would get nothing for it. So got to give him a little bit of credit there. Obviously, Caleb has a much better situation for sure. But yeah, no, I just like not to overreact to, and again, nobody, that's also noteworthy too. I don't feel like anybody has come out and said, Caleb Williams looks like a future superstar. Caleb Williams is lighting it up. There's just like, there seems to be a sense of calm about just like how normal he looks. Like the offensive operation looks fairly smooth. It's a give and take, but there's really not a lot of concern either. And that was, I mean, with last year, you know, early on, I think we had an episode where we talked about like people were pleased with how Justin the offense were looking in OTAs. But once the pads came on, people were very concerned, and we just kept hearing as camp went on about how bad the offense was looking. That first preseason game, the preseason game where they played a little bit of extended time, it was looking really concerning. So we'll see how it goes along as camp goes along and the pads come on. Do things get better or do concerns start to emerge? But yeah, one thing we've learned is you can't overreact to good things, obviously, in camp.
Yes.
You know, with the 2019 Mitch reports and with the Fields reports that started to roll in the last 2 years, you know, you should start to get a little concerned if the report every single day is, wow, that offense looks lost right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things we could say for sure about Caleb Williams coming out of this camp is that everybody is pretty confused about these reports about Caleb Williams being a diva, about him having a bad personality, about him being weak. You know, there were a lot of bad, I want to say bad faith reports, and so I'm just going to say it. There are a lot of bad faith reports about Caleb's personality and how he was just going to destroy a team from within. And all we've heard from every Bears player right now has been just like, this is just a good guy. This is not only a good person, it's a gamer. You know, like, I don't know where these reports were coming from.
There's even like a note of anger, it feels like, from some, like DeMarcus Walker seemed angry. Like, you guys really fed us a bill of goods on this dude. I'm kind of mad that I was a little concerned about the kid because all you heard was that he was a diva. He's like, this is bullshit. And so speaking of, the friend, Greg Gabriel,
enemy of the podcast,
one of the worst mea culpas I think I've ever seen.
I cannot. I'm almost upset that Windy City Gridiron put this up there, but he put this on the original Greg Gabriel report. Did a lot of the work in causing Bears fans to believe that this was a diva, to believe that Caleb Williams had personality problems. And it was this Greg Gabriel article that originally went up on Windy City Gridiron, and it kind of spread. It spread through Twitter, and this is kind of it colored what Bears fans were going to believe about this. And apparently, like you said, it colored what DeMarcus Walker believed about Caleb Williams. And this quote unquote apology is one of the most embarrassing non-apologies I've ever seen. He's just like, well, I reached out to sources. None of them apparently went to USC. He did not reach out to USC. He just flat out says that in this article. And he's like, well, I'm not going to apologize for telling you what my sources said, but I can tell you that Caleb Williams is not what I said he was for months. Now that I have actually gone to a primary source, which is Caleb, which is USC, now that I know the truth, I could gladly tell you that, you know, Caleb is not what I said he was for months. And that's it. That's the end of this thing. Like, fuck you, dude. Like, you colored the discourse on this kid for months, which you and I were like, I don't know. I don't see that. Like, everything that I saw from Caleb Williams while he played was a dude that never gives up. Like, even if he's down by 20, this dude is going to go out there. He's going to play. He's going to grind to get that last score. We never saw anything from his teammates. We've never seen one USC teammate come out and say, Caleb Williams is a distraction. Caleb Williams caused problems here. Caleb Williams is the reason we didn't get a national title this last year at USC. Everybody we saw at USC said, yeah, we love Caleb. You know, they were not a bad word. Really, most of this came from Greg Gabriel. Like, he is the primary source of this Caleb Williams bullshit among the Bears fan base. He
blames his sources.
Yeah.
Well, it was clear that and this is Greg. I know enough people who know Greg Gabriel. I won't pretend I know Greg Gabriel. I know enough people who know Greg Gabriel to tell you that Greg is a useful idiot for anybody in the league who wants to get their narrative out there. And it's not hard to figure out why the Caleb Williams narrative was what it was. Washington has rallied so hard around Jaden Daniels, and now I think they're still behind this push, primarily on ESPN, to push the whole, did the Bears make the wrong choice? Because Jaden Daniels stuff. But, like, we know Washington did make an offer to trade up for number one. Obviously, there was the hope that if you painted Caleb Williams as this diva, if you painted him as a guy who wouldn't play in Chicago, blah, 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 the Bears would maybe listen to Washington's offer. And guys like Greg Gabriel are very useful for putting that kind of agenda out there. If you want it leaked, you can just rile him up and point him in a direction. And so it's very noteworthy that even in Greg's non-apology, or even Greg's apology, he still won't say he was wrong. Doesn't even say his sources were wrong. Said his sources interpreted the information incorrectly.
Ridiculous, Greg.
And then he's arguing, I'm blocked by him, but I'm told he's currently arguing on Twitter right now with everyone being critical of him still. So he's learned absolutely nothing. We should give no more attention to this old guy who has just been full of shit the entire time. Was fired as a college scouting director 15 years ago for a good reason. He was the head drafter for a Bears team that was very bad at drafting. It's just long past time to put him out to pasture.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting about this, and obviously this non-apology is garbage, and yeah, he should be ignored going forward. One of the things he says about this is that from the NFC GMs that he talked to, it all focused on concerns about his play after the Notre Dame game, which, first of all, Greg, the things you were saying were not about his play. Second of all, to be concerned about his play after the Notre Dame game, this is essentially when Caleb was taking what was open. He was throwing really tight, accurate passes. He constantly had pressure at his face because we're talking about UCLA. We're talking about, like, a lot of these games that you and I were talking about being impressed about. We were like, man, he had no time to do the bullshit that we saw last year, to do the Manziel stuff. He basically never had a chance to do that because of all the pressure that was in his face. He had to take, you know, what was given. He had to play within the framework of Lincoln Riley's offense. And he nailed it. And Gabriel even agrees he had good stats. USC lost some games in there, but he played very well in these games. He just didn't have a chance to throw these 25-yard bombs. You know, he didn't have a chance to scramble around in the pocket and increase his time to throw. He played like he's going to have to play in the NFL, essentially, and he did a good job of it. So that's very curious to me. That smells incorrect to me, because I feel like NFL GMs at this point do know, you know, that is what's going to be replicable. That's what works in the NFL right now. So you can tell that these guys are feeding him bullshit that he should not have latched onto.
Yeah, I mean, it was all none of this happens to Greg and everyone else if you just didn't want to believe it in the first place. And then you got to ask, like, why did you want to believe that? What was it about Caleb Williams that you were so determined not to like. And when it comes to Greg, I'll let y'all draw your own conclusions about what you think it was about Caleb Williams that turned that dude off instantly. I have my own suspicions. But yeah, it was just a pure bad faith, just one of the more upsetting draft discourses that I've ever seen. So
Yeah. So that's about, I guess, do we want to talk about Jervon Dexter? I don't know how much of you are. I want to talk about.
I know you're still swerving with Jervon. He ran his conditioning tests with the defensive ends this year instead of with the defensive tackles because he's lean and mean right now. So remember last year when Darnell prepped for, was it the wide receiver?
The wide receiver conditioning test. Accidentally.
So we showed up and, ran it, the tackle one, and they were like, wow, this guy's in incredible shape. So
they're like, damn, like, what's wrong with you? He's like, well, here's what you sent me. And they were like, oh, we're sorry. That was a mistake. But he looked good. No, Jervon physically looks awesome. That's the thing that nobody could shut up about on either side of the ball was that Jervon has lost all of his baby weight and just added pure muscle. Like, the dude looks like a beast right now. He has had a very successful first week of practices. When Caleb has had passes deflected, they have all been Jervon Dexter. Now, again, how much you want to put into that is questionable because we talked about this at length before Jervon was drafted. His greatest skill in college was deflecting passes and following the quarterback's eyes, but that's because he was told, like, you know, you're not going to be pass rushing. So he was able to look into the backfield a lot. That was his role in college. And when you don't have pads on, that's a lot of what you're doing, you know, in practice. So I don't know how much to put into that. A lot of people seem hyped on this guy. Obviously, I'm excited. I'm a huge Jervon Dexter stan, as we have tracked over the course of this podcast. But yeah, we've heard a lot about that. We've heard a lot about Montez Sweat. One of the things we've heard about Jervon when asked, people are like, so what do you do with your day? And he's like, I basically stalk Montez Sweat. I go around, I see what he's doing, and then I mimic it. So I'm sure Montez is having a lot of fun with that. It's just Jervon was like, he gets it in an ice bath, I get it in an ice bath. He goes to eat, I'm looking at what he's eating so I can eat that. We talked a lot last year about how Jervon is like not afraid to just stop a dude and pick his brain. Last year it was the offensive lineman. He was like, hey, why did you do that? How did you know I was going to do this move? Like, what are you looking at? So he can kind of freak with offensive linemen. And this year it seems like he's just, I want the success Montez Sweat has had. So guess what? I'm going to be in his hip pocket annoying the hell out of him. And I appreciate that from a young guy. But yeah, other than him, I really haven't heard too much just because there's a lot of talent at a lot of various positions. And, you know, a lot of the focus is going to be on Caleb this preseason.
Yeah. We had our first, Roma Dunze is breaking barriers, because Tyreek Stevenson described him as, deceptively fast today. So he's breaking the color barrier there. He's drawing the Welker compliment.
Incredible.
So it was one of the first times I've ever heard someone apply that particular comment.
He runs weird. He runs in a way that makes it look like he's not fast, and then all of a sudden he's just fast.
I think he's just so fluid for a guy who is his size that I think with a guy that size, when they are fast, you almost expect them to look like they're just like really chugging, and he's not. He's just like a strider, and it's so smooth. Yeah. And then I think people are really surprised when it turns out that he is just burning right past him. Yeah. No, the other thing I was going to say about Jervon. Yeah. He's clearly Jervon Dexter. Definitely. Is it an overstatement to say he is probably the key to the entire defense this year and how it performs? They didn't add a whole lot of pieces to that defensive line. So any improvement there, and honestly, any chance of just not getting worse from last year, rests on whether Jervon Dexter really levels up in year two. And obviously, I mean, they believe he can. But yeah, it's going to be – I'm going to follow everything I hear about Jervon Dexter with great interest because he is definitely, I think, the key to whether this defense can take the next step or at least even just hold where it was last year, and hopefully the offense improves.
Yeah, I have to agree. To a lesser extent, Austin Booker. I know Austin Booker has gotten a lot of good press guys. My policy is just fifth-round picks don't exist until they do something. We talked about this last year. I'm not going to talk about him. This is probably the only time I'll talk about him until he does something at a regular season game, and then we'll bring him up. Do we have anything else for the Bears, or do we want to fan out? Do we want to talk about the rest of the league?
Let's see. How do we feel about the fact that they're still rotating centers?
I'm fine with that. Only because I expect that both will play this season, right? I think even if Bates takes the starting center job as we expect, we have two guards who are going to get hurt, and I think both of us expect Bates to simply slide over to whichever guard position he's needed at, and then we're going to see the backup center. It seems like Kramer is even getting some work at center. So I think this is planning. This is forward thinking. Like, we know we are not going to have one center this season. We know one of our guards or both of them will get hurt. We need both of these guys to be ready. And that's it. There's nothing else to say about that. We need both of these guys to get work.
Yeah. And we haven't, are you surprised they haven't added a Yannick Ngakoue yet? Do you think they will still add a Yannick Ngakoue? Do you think they really are actually okay with these edges that they have right now?
I said I wouldn't say his name again, but I do think this depends on how they feel about Austin Booker. I think it depends on, do they really think he's ready to be a rotational piece at defensive end? If he is, I wonder if they even care to go out and spend extra money on Unique. But I mean, the Bears have been mentioned in every rumor for every remaining available veteran free agent, haven't they? Like, it just seems like everyone's like, he could go to the Bears because we have a lot of cap room left.
Yeah, well,
so I think they're going to spend on someone.
There's not a lot left right now, though. Ogba just signed back with the Dolphins. So I would think if the Bears do add a veteran edge at this point, still going to be either Yannick or Carl Lawson. And I would assume if it's Yannick, it's got to be way below his price point from last year.
Yeah. I mean, it may not be an edge. The Bears might go out there and get an offensive lineman. There are a lot of veteran offensive linemen who could be quality backup pieces here. But yeah, I mean, it just makes too much sense for it to be Unique. But like last year, I don't expect Unique to go through camp. You know, I don't think he wants to do that. So if that's what we're going to do, if that's inevitable, like, you know, call me in a month when we actually sign him and he's good to go and he's healthy again.
All right. Yeah. So let's look around the league here.
Yeah. Who do we start with?
So you wanted to mention the fact that neither Bengals wide receiver at this point has gotten an extension. What do we think the Bengals' plan is here? Because I understand being a little wary of extending T. Higgins. Like, when you've got the guys that they have and you've just paid Burrow and assuming you're going to pay Ja'Marr Chase, like, of those two, the one you keep is Chase. He's younger. He's better. And we've talked about Higgins is in that mold of guys like Allen Robinson, where we've talked about, they don't age as well. Yeah. Like, the guys that don't win with any kind of speed, that are like big body guys, when they fall off, it tends to be precipitous. So, like, I sort of understand them saying, like, we can't keep everybody, and he's the one we're willing to sacrifice. But at the same time, holding on to him because they're in a Super Bowl or bust window right now. But, like, what is the logic behind playing hardball with Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase? What the fuck?
Yeah, you need to shit or get off the pot if you're the Bengals. This feels like a very wait-and-see approach. Like, well, if Joe Burrow is bad, why are we paying wide receivers? I feel like that's what they're thinking. I also, obviously, the Bengals are the cheapest franchise in the NFL. It's well known that they don't want to spend money on people. So the idea that they're going to keep both of these wide receivers was always a pipe dream. It's just that the prevailing wisdom was, they're going to pay Ja'Marr Chase, and then you're going to let go of T. Higgins. But they've missed multiple windows where Higgins had high value. They would have got a good, solid return to get a cheap replacement, right? Like, I'm not good with them getting rid of Higgins because of how good he is, but if you're going to do that, get the maximum value, get a cheap rookie wide receiver to replace him and be the Bengals, right? But you are bleeding him of his value. Last year, he had a bad season. There were obviously extenuating circumstances for that, but there's just no other way to say it. He had a bad year. So what are you going to get for him at this point? That bridge seems to have been burned, too. Contract negotiations there seem to have really soured tea on this franchise, and I don't expect him to re-sign, even if they offer him money at this point. The problem is, now you seem to be doing that with Ja'Marr Chase. The Bengals have come out, and they have said not only – they didn't just say, well, we're working on an extension. They said, we're just not going to do it this year. It's just not going to happen. We're not even going to talk about it. That, to me, is insane. Like, because that is going to make Ja'Marr Chase upset. And he is already not practicing. He hasn't practiced 2 days in a row. I mean, you've got to be worried about, does he want to be a Bengal going forward? If Burrow has a bad year, is he going to stay?
It makes no sense, given the logic of how extensions in the NFL work.
Yeah.
The sooner you sign them, the cheaper they will get. That's why what the Cowboys are doing right now makes no sense to me. Like, the longer you wait on Dak Prescott, the more money Jordan Love is going to get in the meantime, and the Dak Prescott contract goes up. The more you wait on CeeDee Lamb, the more, like, the longer you wait, the more. I don't know. The only scenario in which you wait and then pay the guy less is if he has a bad year. And, like, are you anticipating this guy has a bad year? Is that what you want? Yeah, like, do you not believe in Ja'Marr Chase? What does Ja'Marr Chase have to do for you guys to believe in him? It's just preposterous. It makes no sense. The only explanation is literally just with the Bengals, of course, is, you know, cash-poor franchise. Yeah. Going to do cash-poor things, I guess.
I mean, it's just so – they seem to be just going around and alienating everyone they have in turn to be gifted what they were gifted, like this top-flight quarterback and two top-tier wide receivers, and to seemingly squander it this badly is just – the Bengals do a lot of Bengals things, man. Like, we get disappointed in the Bengals routinely, but this one is like a real coup de grace of a fucked up situation. Like, I wouldn't have even been mad if they traded T. Higgins. Like, I understand where you're at as a franchise. We all know what you're going to do. So trade him at peak value, man. Like, at this point, it just feels like you're going to have to let him walk, because now you have to think about who you're going to franchise, right? And it's not going to be T. Higgins. So now he's just gone. You're just not getting anything for him. Is that your plan as a franchise, to let a number one wide receiver go for nothing? It seems insane to me, but it feels like that's the way they're going. I'm glad you brought up Dallas, because I wasn't even going to talk about it. God, for all the world, it seems like they're letting Dak go, and they're going to use that money to re-sign Micah Parsons, right?
Yeah, I mean, the only way to explain what's going on with Dallas is that Jerry is just having a hissy fit. Like, that loss to the Packers pissed him off. And again, I get it. Dak Prescott is... he is... the odds that the next quarterback you get after moving on from Dak Prescott is significantly worse than Dak Prescott is like 95%.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. But at the same time...
we said this about Tony Romo, and then they replaced him with Dak, though. This is the problem.
And I do kind of wonder if maybe Jerry has some arrogance about that, because he did find Dak Prescott. Like, is he telling himself, like, people said this about Romo. They said I couldn't afford to lose Romo, and I found Dak. Well, I can lose Dak and find the next Dak. But it's a risky gamble. And again, I mean, I think Dak is a top 8 quarterback in the NFL. And, like, yeah, is he going to carry you to a Super Bowl win? No, but as we just discussed in our quarterback episode, there's, like, Patrick Mahomes. There's the next tier, which is Josh Allen. And then Dak is, you know, somewhere in that next tier after that, where it's like, would you really be surprised if Dak won a Super Bowl? Like, if he had 3 hot games in January? But, like, you know, we're reaching the point where it feels like a Patrick Mahomes is or a Tom Brady is just warping brains when you've got Jerry Jones looking at Dak Prescott, who, I mean, what did Dak do last year?
He's just an unquestionably great quarterback who just struggles.
0.5% completion percentage, 4,500 yards passing, 36 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 105.9 passer rating. Like, that does, those grow on trees, guys. 7.7 yards per attempt, 7.28 adjusted net yards per attempt. I mean, the dude, you just, those don't grow on trees. You're not going to find that. And he's only 30 at a position where we've seen guys play well into their 40s lately. Like, it's, I mean,
look at the Goff extension. They're the same age essentially, and you know they're gonna get this contract to play through their year 34 season. It's very strange. Like I there are a lot of weird QB deals going on right now. We have this very strange upper middle class in the NFL, and I guess this transitions into what I wanted to talk about too, about Jared Goff and Trevor Lawrence. You're making these deals. Do you feel good about them? Like, you know, it's unquestionable that they're good deals, right? The Trevor Lawrence contract is a good deal. The Jared Goff contract is a good deal. Like, these are contracts you have to pay because you're not going to improve upon them right now. They're good quarterbacks. The question is, do you really want to be locked in here at this point? Like, the second you sign them, it feels like you're saying, God, is this where I wanted to top out? Is this where I wanted to be as a franchise when I paid my quarterback? You know? And I think Dak Prescott is in that area. I feel like the Cowboys are looking at the Jared Goff and Trevor Lawrence contracts specifically, and they're saying, do we want to do that to our team? It's just like, what's the alternative? Like, where are you going to turn if you're the Cowboys? How do you get better from Dak Prescott next year? Yeah. Like, you don't, right? You just don't. You punt.
I mean, there's no way with that defense and with Dak at quarterback for this year, there is no way you're going to land. And this is, we talked about this quarterback draft class in advance. Some guys are going to emerge. But, like, usually if a year out you know a quarterback class looks this weak, you're not wrong. And they're not going to be close to the top guy in this class, or maybe even one of the top three or four guys in this class. Even if they do decide to go that route. So it's just, it is a dangerous game. And again, the best case scenario for them here is that Dak goes out and has the best year of his career, really shows Jerry. And then what? He's got you bent over the table entirely because you refused to discuss an extension up front. You burned all your goodwill with him. You could, if he goes out there and throws for 5,000 yards this year, you could end up having to pay the guy $70 million a year because you've lost all your leverage. It makes no sense. It's an old man throwing a fit is what it is. And then to not pay CeeDee Lamb, like, in what scenario do you not pay CeeDee Lamb as soon as possible? Like, what more could you want from him? I guess, like, I understand if you're Jerry and you're dumb and you're doing the quarterback wins shit and you're overreacting to a playoff loss, you're mad that Dak hasn't delivered yet, fine. But what has the fucking wide receiver ever done to you? Like, why are you playing this kind of hardball with CeeDee Lamb? It makes no sense to me.
Why wait until the last minute with these guys? Like, you are just going to piss them off. You're just risking everything. Dak doesn't even have to improve. Like, let's look at what Derek Carr got on the open market. Let's look at what Kirk Cousins got on the open market. What do you think Dak Prescott is going to get next year on the open market? If that's honest to God, what you let happen.
So much money. If he hits free agency,
yeah,
the Steelers will just give him a bag. Like, the Steelers will be like, what do you want to come here?
On a blank check, he will become the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. That's what he is worth on the open market because none of the guys ahead of him will ever hit it.
And it feels worth noting that in that playoff game against the Packers, now granted, they scored a lot late, but like the Cowboys scored 32 points and had over 510 total yards of offense. The defense gave up 48 points. So, like, it seems very odd to me to decide that the blame there goes.
That was the weirdest playoff game.
It was.
It does not make any sense what happened in that game. I mean, if you are going to blame somebody, you got to blame the head coach. Right, for what happened to the Cowboys. Like, they just have a head coach who should not still be head coaching, in my opinion. And yet, it's all this, just with the Bengals and the Cowboys, it's this wait-and-see approach that is not effective. in today's NFL from any angle, from a personal angle with the relationships with your players, from a team building angle, from a salary cap angle. It just doesn't make any sense. And yet we've got two teams on the opposite end of the spectrum. We've got one team that historically does not want to spend, and then we have the team that maybe wants to spend more than any other team in the league. And yet they're both on this wait-and-see approach with their best players. And it just feels like a disaster waiting to happen. And it confuses me. So one of the things we talked about, I really want to talk about this Trevor Lawrence contract extension. It's living in rent-free in my head right now, Kyle. Because you pay him, you have to pay him. If you're the Jaguars, right? You have no choice. It's not a bad extension because there's no alternative.
The way the Jaguars, I can't believe Trenton Baalke still has a job. Hold on, so 20,
yeah,
21 Jaguars draft. Let's take a look at this. Okay, so in back-to-back drafts where the Jaguars owned the number one overall pick. And in 2021, they also had an extra in 2021, the year they drafted Lawrence, they had an extra first round pick. And they had an extra second round pick. And then let's see here, 2022 Jaguars draft picks. And then in 2022, they had again, two first round picks and two third round picks. So in two drafts, the first two drafts of the Lawrence era, where they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 picks in the first three rounds, and where they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 picks in the first two rounds, the Jaguars have managed Trevor Lawrence, obviously, who we believe is good, but again, is Travis Etienne, who... you know, was really fun at times in 2022, but then this year they had him as like the bell cow back, had one of the lowest success rates in the NFL, only averaged 3.8 yards per carry. So, I mean, a gadget running back that's kind of useful, but again, you spent the 25th overall pick on him, and he's a running back.
Well, and there are a lot of those you can just sign in the NFL. They're just right. All around.
And they also drafted Tyson Campbell. I believe he just got extended, so he's pretty good. But Walker Little has just been kind of an acceptable tackle, like not even a particularly...
I mean, certainly not effective enough to make it so his offensive line situation is better than shit.
Andre Sisco is like just kind of fine. I mean, so out of... you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like I said, 9 picks in the first round of those two drafts. You know, Devin Lloyd's not really been that impressive. Luke Fortner, the guard that they drafted, who I believe is actually now playing center for them, was a disaster last year. I mean, it's just, it's a bad two, like, they had so much draft capital. And I believe Trent Baalke was also in charge in the 2020 draft. And then that year they had two first round picks. C.J. Henderson, not a dude. Kalyvon Chason, not a dude. Laviska Shenault, just a waste of, like, basically Velus Jones. Yeah. Devon Hamilton. I mean, they just so much draft capital. Absolutely. They could rate. There will be a documentary someday on how Trent Baalke just absolutely squandered the cheap years of Trevor Lawrence. Just absolutely wasted him. And here we are. And now the cheap years are gone. You've had to pay him. And it's on Trevor now to produce not just a shit ton of surplus value to outperform his contract, but to then outperform a roster that wasn't good enough around him when he was cheap.
Yep.
It's just, and it sucks for Trevor because we both think Trevor's very good. I think Trevor Lawrence, when healthy, is easily a top 10 NFL quarterback. I really do believe that. But I think he is in that 6 to 10 range where he does need some help to really, and he doesn't have it. That offensive line is terrible. And the worst part is because they went on that huge spending splurge before year two with Trevor, because Baalke was afraid he was going to get his ass fired and needed to put a contender on the field immediately. They're kind of locked in on that bad O-line because those guys are all expensive. They're all locked in as starters and they're not good. So it and the wide receiver contracts, he's made a mess of them. I know you seem to be very high on Christian Kirk for some reason, but they gave real money to Gabe Davis. It's just
Gabe Davis deal is a disaster. They're allergic to making good decisions with this. Well, and they ended
up burning draft capital to trade for Calvin Ridley, because we always thought like, oh yeah, that deal, obviously you give up a second round pick if that guy ends up being good and you extend him, but then you didn't extend him. So you gave up what ended up being a third round pick for that guy for a one year rental of Calvin Ridley, just constantly burning capital everywhere.
Well, and what's worse for Jacksonville and Trevor Lawrence is, you know, at the time when they were building all of this, there was kind of this idea that, wow, Jacksonville is set because they're in a bad division, right? They can just conquer this division, you know, and get into the playoffs kind of easily every year, you know, and then capitalize on that. And what happened this last year is we've seen that has shifted. The Texans went from worst to first, and they seem to have solidified themselves, right? They exploded with Stroud and Will Anderson, and this offseason they just added to that, right? They're solidifying their position at the top of that division. Yeah. The Colts, even without Tony Richardson, had a really good season last year, really solid. That offensive line made a nice comeback. It seems like the Colts are solidifying themselves. The Tennessee Titans this offseason, I don't expect them to be great, but they spent a lot on upgrading that team. They are no longer a whipping boy here, even without Ryan Tannehill. They're going to be a tough out. And suddenly you're looking at a Jacksonville team that might be the worst team in the AFC South. And where does that get you with your $50 million a year quarterback? You know, this contract is not get out of a bowl until 2029. That's the first time that you're thinking about, like, can we cut him? Do we move him? Everything before that is a disaster. You know, it's sitting on your books like an albatross. So what do you do as the Jaguars? You didn't improve this offseason. You made two pretty good, I think, draft picks in the first round. But we've seen where those first round picks have gotten the Jaguars so far, and they are not going to pay dividends immediately. Just suddenly you're sitting in a difficult division in the AFC, and you've now paid a quarterback who you already had, who probably isn't going to get any better. You're just stuck. You're just stuck in the mud, right? It was a move that you feel better making as the Lions with Jared Goff, because you're like, well, God, we feel like we're there. We were a couple quarters away from the Super Bowl, right? As the Lions, you don't have that feeling as the Jaguars. You're just like, we were in a couple quarters away from beating the goddamn Texans. Like we are so far away. Yeah, we need so much more help. And they're just lost. I feel bad for them.
They have maybe two. I think Trevor Lawrence is a blue chip player. I think Josh Allen, the defensive end, is a blue chip player. But that's really it on that entire roster, which you're entering basically year four of the rebuild at this point. And like I said, you had like 3 years in a row where you had either the number one overall pick and another first round pick.
Yeah.
They had the Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze situation 3 years in a row. And you've parlayed it into this. Yeah. You had a rookie quarterback contract and you parlayed it into this. It's just a mismanagement masterclass. It'll be studied years from now to figure out how they got there. And like, yeah, I think Trevor Lawrence is great. And I think on a normal roster, is Trevor Williams or Trevor Lawrence good enough to overcome being paid a lot of money? Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Is he good enough to overcome being paid a lot of money and being surrounded by incompetent boobs everywhere else? No. I think he's this generation's Matthew Stafford, and that was Stafford in Detroit. Was Matthew Stafford worth the contract that the Lions gave him? Of course he was, but he wasn't good enough to overcome for the contract and for everyone in Detroit being a fucking idiot.
Trev doesn't even have Megatron. He doesn't even have that one guy on offense that he can go to.
I feel like Lawrence is the guy that eventually gets moved to like whatever team Mike McDaniel is coaching 5, 6, 7 years from now.
Yeah.
He trades for Trevor Lawrence after the Jaguars fans spend 10 years blaming him for everything. And then he immediately hoists a Lombardi trophy. So
yeah, I mean, a guy in a similar situation who I expect to be Trevor Lawrence to be in this situation probably next year or the year after is Justin Herbert. I mean, you can look into your future and see, well, okay, you've paid this guy the money. Now they can't keep Mike Williams. Now they don't have Keenan Allen. Oh, you made a bad first-round pick on Quentin Johnston. And all of a sudden, like, you've got nothing. Austin Eckler is gone. And all you have now is Justin Herbert. You still have that contract. And look where that got you before. Like, you're weighed down by this contract for a very good QB. It's not like the contract was bad. It's just you squandered it. You squandered the window with him on a good contract, and you squandered it in a way to where you don't even have talent now that's clogging up the books. You just don't have the talent, period. And it's just sad. We in the NFL right now, we are seeing so many quarterbacks like that. It's Herbert, it's Lawrence, it's potentially Dak Prescott. We are just seeing this good generation of quarterbacks get bogged down with horrible teams around them.
Yep.
Yeah. So, what else do we got? Do we got Kyle? Was there anything else that really
I can't really think of anything your off interest? Top of my head, yeah. No, I think I'm good. I think that's
all right. I think that's nice.
Good filler episode, yeah. So, yeah.
Yep, next week, Pats come on tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, so we'll have some real reactions, real stuff to discuss for sure. Yeah, we'll see y'all next week, and then a couple weeks we'll have Hard Knocks. So,
hell yeah! All right, see everybody next week. Way out on that bumper floor. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.